We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in you. We shall never surrender. We shall never surrender.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Art of Surrender MMA Focused podcast. It's episode number 53. We're back here with Brad Hampson. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm good, mate. And my co-host, Aaron Morelli. How are you?
I'm good. I should have introduced my own name there, but anyway.
It doesn't matter, mate. We do one take crazy. And then we carry on.
One take and we keep going. It's crazy times. How you been?
Not too bad. Obviously, gyms closed in Sydney, ran lockdown and things like that. So just working from home, getting out and about in the sun a little bit more to get out of the house during the day, which is quite nice. Not something in the past I've appreciated as much, but because we're in lockdown, I think that people are starting to get out and enjoy the simple things more. So yeah, but not really a lot to report, man. As you know, like, it's been real quiet in Sydney and we all haven't been able to catch up and train, but we just keep things moving and life goes on. But yeah, what has it been, 2.5 months since we've done one of these, something like that?
Yeah, it's been a little while. I think obviously back then we'd just gone into all this. So I think everyone got a bit tired and a bit out of routine, and so that explains the break, but we're back. You know, there's a good card coming up on the weekend with 266. So
yeah,
hopefully everything starts to open back up and MMA gets going, we can get back to training and get back to normal life.
That's it. So what about yourself? How are things with you?
Yeah, good. For people that aren't in Sydney, I'm not in a LGA of concern. So the lockdown hasn't been too hard on me. I live out near the beach as well, so I have access to that. So, you know, in that respect, it's been okay. But, you know, you want to be anyway, jiu-jitsu, you know sort of what it's like in the gym there. So you miss that, and you miss training and the exercise that comes with it and stuff like that. So I definitely want to get back into the gym more than anything.
Itching for it, huh?
Yeah, it's just that sense of community. You know, you go, you know, 3-4 times a week, whatever you go, and you just, yeah, it's just good fun, right? And you don't realize until you're not doing it that, yeah, you know, that space, that time of day, you just realize how much you miss it. I definitely cannot wait for that to come back. But hopefully not long.
So last one, I think we were looking at it, the last episode we did of these was, did we say the 5th of July? So it was a couple of months ago, now, but it was UFC 264, McGregor and Poirier. And I mean, after the trauma we witnessed on that evening, maybe that's why we haven't touched base in a bit of time, eh?
Yeah, again, to be honest, like, and I know, like, it's nothing to do with, you know, Poirier's great fighter and he's, you know, he deserves to now fight for the title and the winner. But it was just like another deflating thing. Like, you know, McGregor card, typically something big happens. Like, if you think about obviously Diaz, when he lost, but it was so finite. And so, you know, and the first fight, obviously everyone wanted the second Poirier fight, earlier on in the year with minimal fans and stuff, but this fight was going to be the one. He's back, it's all big crowd entertaining, and then he breaks his leg and we only go round one. And I actually thought the fight was just about to get going because obviously he had him down on the floor and McGregor had managed to get back up, and I was like, oh, it's about, like, here we go, we're gonna actually see a fight here. And unfortunately he broke his leg, and the big story of the leg kicks going in ended up, you know, some people were saying, oh, it's not going to be a factor in this one, but it ended up being a massive, massive factor. So it
was, and all the craziness around McGregor saying he's going to, like, send him out in a on a stretcher and things like that. But then McGregor was the one who ended up leaving on a stretcher. Fucking crazy times, eh?
It's still crazy. Like, he's his star power and what he is, like, he's still in America going around, he's presenting awards, he's floating around. Everyone still wants a piece of the McGregor business. And his name, like people, I think people forget that at the end of the day, and this is what I think, I just like to understand why he still fights. At the end of the day, he's going to be the one laughing at the end of it all, because he's probably going to be a billionaire in a few years, and some of these fighters are going to retire and they're going to have to find jobs or be an analyst or something. So that's why sometimes, you know.
He's going to make a lot of money in his lifetime, man. Like even more. Because think about like Proper 12, and that's kind of been spun off now, and he sold like his majority stake in that. I think he'll still probably hold like a certain number of shares, you know, probably forever. And then Tidal Sport now is like, you know, you can see that's the one he's really pushing at the moment. And he'll do the same kind of thing in like 2, 3, 4 years time. He'll probably sell out the majority of it for people who can really run with it. And then he'll just hold a minor, you know, shareholding forever again. And then, but there'll probably be something else they'll be focused on by that stage.
Yeah, I think he's the Proper 12. I mean, Proper 12 wholly relies on him, right? Because it's just the average whiskey. It's nothing crazy. I don't know if you've drunk it before, but it's like
Jameson 2.0, man. It's just a direct competitor to Jameson.
The funny thing is some people were like, oh, it's a crap bottle. People forget it's like a $70 bottle of whiskey. It's not, you know, there's way more expensive bottles, but that whole brand relies on him. So he's obviously going to keep making money there, but he was smart to sell when he sold, because you never know with those things how far they go, especially as he gets older and he's maybe not fighting as much. I think that he's got multiple businesses and he's got multiple streams of income, investments, and, you know, it was the Forbes highest paid. So I think at the end of the day, it's not really that big of a deal now when he loses. And that's probably the problem, to be honest. We said that before the last fight. But in all, I think the bigger thing is gotta be happy for Poirier. He's fighting for the title now. I think he will. I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think he will beat Oliveira personally. I think he's just I just think he's very, very tough. I just think he's too durable for most people in the division. And I just think he, number one, deserves to be champion. And number two, I think he will become champion. So, and for Conor, I think he should just fight Nate Diaz personally. I think that's the only fight that makes sense. So
you mentioned Conor's star power before. I thought it was hilarious. I kind of like low-key appreciated how now he's like on one leg and he's walking again, but he's got this cane that, you know, is like the cane's probably worth 20 grand or something like that.
Yeah, he said it's a prop. He said he doesn't actually really need it. He's just like he needed one for like a week or something, and now he's just using it as a prop because he likes it. He thinks it's cool. So, you know, he's say what you want about the guy. He's definitely entertaining. He says some crazy stuff. I do find people like he goes too far, this and that. Like he does sometimes, obviously, but it's what his whole brand was built on. And when you're winning, it's cool and it's funny and it's awesome. And unfortunately, when you're losing, it's not so funny, right? But at the end of the day, that's what he went to Brazil and said that he would kill anyone that was not fit to work. And people were laughing and cheering it on. And then now all he says is, your wife's in my DMs. And people are like, oh, that's so disgusting. It's like, it's just funny to me. Like it shows the difference. When you're winning, everything's fair game. It's awesome. It's hilarious. And obviously 2021 and 2015 is very different worlds in terms of what's accepted.
And the exposure of the UFC as well.
Yeah. Thanks to him. That's the thing. That's the thing. Like all that craziness helped drag the UFC to where it is today. So I think although he's a bit crazy and sometimes over the top and can be a bit off, I think the thing in the cage could have been avoided by not shoving a microphone in his mouth, because you knew what he was going to do. Like you're sitting there in pain with your leg broken. He's already a crazy person. And then you put a microphone in him and then you got Poirier talking shit to him. It was just a recipe for disaster. You know, these guys are crazy. So it was just a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
He's already selling the next fight too, so you got to respect the hustle, eh?
I do respect that everyone says he should just pack up, take his bag and go, but he won't do it. Like he thinks he can win, and I think that does show why I think that probably shows why he has the money, has the success he has, is because when everyone tells you to, he's one of those people, when everyone's looking at you and says, this is not going to work, like, what are you doing? He keeps going, right? So it's probably the mentality that got him there. So, and but I think it's also the downfall of a lot of really good athletes is they, you know, the ones that continue on too far into their career and they start losing. It's because, yeah, they always think they're the best. So it's probably a blessing and a curse for him.
Yeah, but he's still, he can, even if he's not at his peak after that, he comes back, like, you know, whether he is or isn't, I don't know. I'm not even assuming that he will be or won't be, but he's, there's still fights that he can do well in. You know, there's always guys like the Diazes that we've talked about and, you know, other people that would make interesting matchups for him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even that fight, like, I thought, like, I watched, you know, I did watch it back and I think I saw it the other day again on Facebook stuff. And, like, I don't know, I thought it was a good fight. Like, obviously, you lost the first round, but, you know, that you got back up and fought all right. And you got to remember, Poirier is probably the best fighter in the division, in my opinion. So I think there's still fights you can probably take lower down the rung. And I think the thing is, COVID probably affected it as well. Like, I thought it was really smart that he fought Cowboy, because not only did he then sort of do the whole week and get everything out of the way and he's back and he's won something and it takes that pressure away a little bit, but also, you know, in his next opponent gives that little bit of a sort of, you know, I just mauled this guy in 40 seconds. Like, you know, that's that big, you know, like what happened to Aldo. Aldo was petrified. Like, he was looking at the ground and he just rushed in. Like, he gives that aura. But I think what, now that he's lost these fights to Poirier, I think the blueprint's probably there. And I mean, what do you think people are going to do first fight? Leg kicks? And I mean, well, he does. He said he likes to say he has a titanium shin bone now. But, you know, that I just think it's going to be hard because he doesn't have that aura. So he's going to have to win based on pure skill. So I think it's probably best to either fight Nate Diaz, who's hittable as hell. Like, you can hit Nate Diaz. The only problem with that is Nate Diaz doesn't go down, as we saw with Edwards. So he's going to have to be 5-round fit.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, man. I don't know what's going to happen, but either way, I'll be tuning in to watch when and if, you know, I'll be tuning in. Excited to see Poirier, if we're moving away from McGregor as well. I'm excited to see Poirier versus Oliveira. I think that's the number one fight for sure. And of course, like, that was probably the fight to make when Khabib retired, but, you know, it's hard. It was hard because, Dustin had just lost to Khabib. Justin Gaethje had just lost to Khabib. That made way for Chandler. We all know the story. But yeah, it's going to be good to see Poirier get a crack at it because he deserves it.
Well, I tell you, like, if Poirier does beat Oliveira, he's played this game perfectly, because people say it was a risk to fight McGregor again. He's gone and got the payday. And the best part about it is, you say he wins this and then he beats Oliveira. And then Connor beats Diaz. I mean, that fourth fight's there because he's smart to probably say, you know, I'll give you another fight. You know, the leg break was unfortunate, because he can get another payday. And he's probably confident he can beat McGregor again. And if they're to fight a third time, I'll put my money on him. Because at the end of the day, you have to look at the results.
If it's for a title too, and let's hypothetically say McGregor's had a win against Diaz, you know, then, yeah, and Poirier's managed to get the title too, it'd be a massive fourth fight. But flip side on that would be if Diaz ends up beating McGregor again and then just, like, getting a title shot himself.
Yeah, and we're – and, like, I'm – obviously people probably know I was a McGregor fan. I am a McGregor fan, like, but I'm not stupid. I do think he's probably not in his prime anymore, and I think the reality is he hasn't had the same – you can see the difference in octagon time between him and Poirier, right? So I think that's why Nate Diaz is probably his best option, because Nate Diaz has low octagon time as well. So it's probably a good fight. And then, yeah, if out of those two, because remember, this is prize fighting, this is about who brings in the views and the money. Those two, if they fight at 155, the winner can easily fight Dustin Poirier. I don't think anyone's going to balk at that. Well, people might not be so happy with McGregor fighting Poirier again, but at the end of the day, if they put that fight on and it's on, people will buy it and people will watch it regardless, yeah. Right? But I do want to see the division at the same time. Like, I would like to see the division keep moving, because, you know, that's how you get people like Charles Oliveira being champion. Mm. Because remember, we had Khabib, obviously champion for a while, and he was, you know, obviously quite dominant. So that hurt the division. Like, it didn't hurt the division, but it stalled the division. Whereas hopefully we can get a champion that's going back to back to back to back, because 155 is full of beasts, and that's where we can easily talk about Chandler and Gaethje being booked.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot happening, hey. And some new faces in the lightweight division as well. So Chandler and Gate, new faces being Rafael Fiziev, Armen Sarukian, is that how you say it? Obviously Brad Riddell's at number 13 now.
Yeah.
Gregor Gillespie's back, he's number 11. Makhachev's popped his way up to number 5, Benil Dariush. So there's like
Dariush is the one, man. Like, think about it, like he was nowhere. Now look at him. He's up in number 3. And that, to me, the problem for him is, who is he gonna fight? Because they're all booked.
Are they?
Yeah, well, I mean, Makhachev, I don't think Makhachev, who's Makhachev fighting? I don't think he's fighting anyone.
He doesn't have anyone yet. And they're gonna, that's the thing, man. They might. What about if Dariush gets Makhachev?
Oh, I think that's the fight. Right? I think Makhachev has to take a step up in competition now.
Mm.
I mean, you're talking, I mean, yeah, looking at his resume, like, obviously he had that KO loss, but Makhachev needs to step up, and, you know, what a perfect fight for Dariush that would be, right? Given that he needs a top name, and if you can beat the Khabib coached, you know, the next Khabib, that sends you right up the top. So yeah,
so that would make number one contender, so Dustin Poirier versus Oliveira for the title. Then what are you saying? Mm-hmm. You'd have Gaethje at number 2 versus Chandler at number 4, and then Dariush at number 3 versus Makhachev at number 5. So your top 5 are all fighting each other, which, if you think about a division, that's what I want to see in the UFC. I want the top 5 to fight one another.
Yeah, I think that's
to see who is the number one contender, right? That's, and then you have the guys fighting outside the top 5, you know, the top 6 to the top 15 fight each other to move up, maybe from the top 15 to the top 10 and then to the top, you know, like, you understand.
Yeah, that's what we need. That's why, to be honest, I've really grown into Kamaru Usman in welterweight. Like, I really grown to like him because I like what he says about it. He wants to lap the division. Mm. He just keeps defending that title. And that's, to me, what makes you the GOAT, is those title defenses. Just once you become champion, just continuous title defenses. And that's what he seems to be doing. And it'd be great to get a Oliveira, Poirier, even if the title's changing hands, just the champion continuously defending it. I think the only options you have is to either have a McGregor, like someone that's so big and popular, or you need to have a champion that's fighting back to back. You can't have this no man's land sort of. You either need the top 5 fighting each other, or you have your massive superstar that's, you know, able to cater for it, like make up for everything else. So hopefully, yeah, after these fights, the losers can fight the losers and the winners can fight the winners, and we keep moving forward with lightweight.
Yeah, I like the sounds of that, man. So you mentioned what got us off turning off of the McGregor chat and Poirier was Chandler and Gaethje. Were you interested in having a chat about that one?
Yeah, I think that's, again, a fantastic fight to book. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think they're obviously both wrestlers. They both have decent striking, powerful striking. I think it's going to be chaos. I think Chandler will win. Personally, I think he will potentially try and use maybe some wrestling, because Gaethje doesn't use his wrestling that much, to be fair. Mm. I just think Chandler will again do the overhand, right? Like, I mean, we're forgetting that he almost knocked out Oliveira. Like, Oliveira hanging on. Like, he was that close. And that's what was so crushing for him, is he was that close to walking into the UFC and in his second fight becoming UFC champion.
He's handled the loss very well too.
I think he's extremely likable. He actually, one of the things that they've been talking about is in America and Australia, obviously there's this whole vaccine mandates thing, and he hasn't, I don't think he wants to get the vaccine yet or something. So that may be a hiccup, but yet to be determined. They may have to move the fight away from New York, I believe it's that. So hopefully that's the only thing that could really be a hiccup to this fight, I think.
So what's do you like Chandler yourself? You said he's likable. Were you a fan?
Yeah, if you saw the fight when he fought Oliveira, it was pretty much the Chandler show on Embedded, and he's like the perfect marketing for your America. His American story, just he's a, you know, American wrestler. He adopted a son. He's just your perfect PR
package. He's married. He's got, he's a family man with an adopted kid. He's got previous world titles.
And he's jacked. He's your perfect. And he's a nice guy by all accounts. Like you can see, and he's honest. That's the other thing I like about him. You know, there's a lot of fighters that are pretty chill and honest. It's the same thing people like about Poirier.
Yeah.
There's not really any games with them. They're honest. They're humble. And, you know, you either have that brash style or that humble style, and either one of those are going to be liked. So,
I think it's interesting now how with the UFC, there was a lot of like characters and things, and like, you know, the McGregor kind of started that, really putting on a bit of a character. Then you've seen like Sean O'Malley leans into it. Who else have we seen? Colby Covington. But now I think it's more the people who are really authentic and themselves are the ones who are quite likable. The people are starting to like enjoy that. It's like fresh.
I think the issue with a Colby Covington McGregor style is it does start to, like, has an expiry date on it, unfortunately. Like, in terms of, especially if you start losing and you're not winning anymore, it has a potentially expiry date on it. But like, Colby Covington had no choice. They were about to cut him. He was a great fighter. He was doing well, and they were like, "Nah, you're boring. Just another cookie cutter American from American top team." And they were going to cut him. So he went, "You know what? I'm going to put on this shtick." And it is a shtick. Like, everyone knows it's an act. It's not his true self. And unfortunately, you know, he's lost friends because of it, like Masvidal and stuff. And those two are, I don't know if you've seen Masvidal, but he's very pro-Trump, anti-this, anti-that. So, like, they're very similar people, and they were friends for a long time. So, like, he's lost all that, but at the same time, he's now one of the top fighters in the division, making good money. So there's a reason these guys put on that act. But that's what's going to be refreshing, I suppose, about Chandler and Gaethje. It's not really, there's no real acting there. They're just two tough guys.
I'm a fan of Gaethje. I'm a fan of both of them, to be honest. Like, it's one of those, I don't know who I even really want to win that fight. I think I've been a fan of Gaethje for longer because I've been following the UFC, and obviously he's been in it a lot longer than Chandler, but I like both guys in the fight. Don't know which way.
Yeah, I think,
man. So it's going to be a close one, I think. One might not be a close one. There might be a finish, but it's one I think they both have a good, if they fought 10 times, I think they'd win 4 or 5 each.
Yeah. And of note, what the other thing about that card is, I believe that card that they're on, they're all the coach. Who's their coach again?
Is it 267? Which card is that?
I believe it's UFC 267 or 268.
Teixeira, which I'm glad to see Teixeira getting a shot.
Yeah, so that's right. It's 268 because Usman and Colby Covington is the main event. So, and then you got Rose and
Zhang Weili. Chandler. So, man, that's a sick fight card. Sean Strickland versus Luke Rockhold, and there's some heat there. Edgar versus Marlon Vera is going to be a good fight.
Trevor Whitman has 3 title fights that night. All 3 of his title fight back to back to back. because he coaches Rose number. Oh, they're not all title fights. Sorry, excuse me, but he has three fights back to back. Because he has Gaethje. There's Gaethje, there's Rose Namajunas, and he also coaches Usman. So he's going to be going back to back to back that night. So first off, if he manages to go 3 from 3, I mean, what a coach. Either way, what a coach. I mean, there's not many coaches at the moment that are, you know, can say that they've got, you know, number two in the world fighting number four, and the winner of that, it goes a long way to a title shot. And then you've got the champion, two champions fighting back to back on the same card. I mean,
man, and Rose's, that head kick Rose got in her last one was just poetic.
Yeah. I mean, I was concerned in that fight about Zhong Weili, like how fluid, like I just thought that she would be too dominant for Rose, like too powerful, and she would connect. But Rose, man, what a fight. What a performance. Like, she just looked phenomenal. Zhong Weili didn't really look like she could do much. It was amazing. So, and then I think finally the fight that I want to see is Colby Covington and Usman on that card. I think that's the, and I can't wait till we get to this card to break down. But yeah, I just think that's the best fight in the division. I think Colby Covington's the one that pushed Kamaru Usman the most. And I think rematches is what's going to be the most interesting here. Is Colby obviously has that experience, and so does Kamaru. They both have that experience with each other now. Yeah. So they're going to feel in the clinches and in the battle, they're going to feel, you know, whose energy dropped, who, you know, if they felt the other person was struggling here or there and where the openings were. So I think that's going to be a fantastic fight. Rockhold's on that card as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, Sean Strickland. Interesting. So Kamaru Usman, he won the featherweight, Jesus Christ, that's a big weight cut. He won the welterweight title off Woodley in March 2019. So it's been 2.5 years now that he's been the champion. And in that time, he's defended it 4 times. And his fight against Colby Covington was on December 14th, 2019. So it's coming up towards 2 years now. And in that time, I don't think... Oh, okay. Yeah. Colby Covington has 4, and it was against Tyron Woodley. So September last year. So it would have almost been, it would have been just over a year since Covington's last fought.
I just put some in my mind, it's put some respect on Usman's name, like in general. Like, people love Khabib, and Khabib's an amazing fighter and definitely one of the best, but like, what about Usman, man? Like, he, in his last fights, like, let's look, like, Damian Maia, Dos Anjos, Woodley, Covington, Jorge Masvidal, Gilbert Burns, Masvidal again, and then probably if he can beat Colby Covington again. I mean, that's a fantastic streak, right?
Oh, mate.
And then he's beat Leon Edwards before. He's beat Sean Strickland. He's beat names. Like, these are not average fighters, so... And these are headline performances for the title. And in those fights, he's getting, you know, the last two fights are performances of the night, both KOs and TKOs. And this, I mean, he's not only, he's finishing fights. I mean, I don't know what much more you can ask from him. At first, I found him a bit annoying some of the press conferences. But now, again, it's back to that thing we've been discussing. When you start winning, say what you want. You're winning, you can say and do what you want.
I wasn't a huge fan of him for quite some time, Usman. And I also thought he was quite boring too, because he was a little bit, he would coast with his wrestling and not really try and get him out of there. He would finish people when the opportunity was there, but he didn't really try to get people out. And it was like a little bit, like I didn't get excited for his fights, but his last two that he's finished, knocked out Jorge Masvidal. Who did he knock out before that?
Gilbert Burns.
Gilbert Burns, sorry. Yeah, TKO. Gilbert Burns.
Man, and he got rocked in that one.
Yeah. Faced some adversity too. That's right. So both of those fights were great. And I'm all on the train, man. So since his 7th win, it looks like he'd had 12 wins in a row with only one finish up until he TKO'd Colby Covington. And now he's got three finishes out of his last four fights. So he was a decision. Yeah. He was a decision machine, basically, in his last four fights. He's finishing people. So
he went to Whitman.
Now I'm excited to see. Now I'll be definitely a lot more excited for his next fight. That's for sure.
Oh, I think the Colby Covington fight is just. I just think those two are. They're just the perfect opponents for each other. Same style, same pressure, same striking. They're just perfect for each other. But yeah, I suppose.
Who do you think gets it done? Well, you can just say now. We'll break it down when it comes. But
I have a feeling that Covington is gonna knock him out. I think in my brain, Usman will win. But I just had this feeling that Colby Covington's just gonna stop this train that's moving and just go bang, and then we're gonna get the third fight, and then it's gonna build it up. That's my feeling. That's what I want, because I think it's the most entertaining as a fan is these trilogies of two fighters that are at the same level. Like they are, like they're right next to each other. They're toughest opponents, and then they have a trilogy. So that's why I think Colby's going to win. And I'd say if you went to the trilogy, I think Kamaru Usman would probably win the trilogy. So, but I also feel for Leon Edwards sitting in there.
Fuck Leon
Edwards. Poor guy. Why?
Nate Diaz Leon won Edwards. That fight. Stop
no, he did not. Fuck. That was the most annoying thing, I swear. Like, you just see people like, oh, if there was a sixth round, it's like, that's not the way it works. It's like, the reason Nate Diaz.
Schoolyard rules apply, and last punch went to Diaz.
The reason Nate Diaz could do that in the fifth round, if people don't realize, when there's 30 seconds to go and one fighter has the world to lose and the other fighter has nothing to lose, you sort of can start throwing like that. And I think credit to Leon Edwards in that fight, because he kept fighting. He should have just been doing laps around the octagon, because Nate Diaz had everything to gain in that fight, and Leon Edwards really had nothing to gain because he's got.
I disagree, man. I don't feel good for
you know what?
Enough about Edwards. I don't want to hear another fucking word about Edwards. I don't get it, man. You say that Edwards had nothing to gain. I don't think so. I think he had everything to gain, because he was someone who wasn't popular. They needed him to have a big name win in order to push him for a title and give him that crack to take on like the popularity that comes with the title. So he goes out there and then coasts to a decision against Nate Diaz, doesn't really look to finish him, and then ends up getting clipped in the last 30 seconds and made a fool of, and it's his own fault. He probably should have fucking finished him.
Did you watch the same fight I watched?
Yeah, I did.
Did you watch the same fight? He was toying with the guy. Nate Diaz is notorious for not going down, right? Nate Diaz hasn't been finished. No one finishes Nate Diaz. He's like a zombie.
He was toying him, man, but I don't think when you're in his shoes and you're on a 10 fight win streak or whatever he's on, and you haven't had an opportunity for a title shot, and you get this opportunity against Nate Diaz and you're dominating the fight like that, he should have taken more calculated risks to try and like finish the fight or do more. Coasting to a decision and being better than Nate Diaz, because he is better than him, I think, technically, coasting to a decision like that and just picking him apart for a couple of rounds, I don't think that gets you it.
I don't think it was coasting. I think at the end of the day, he was in there and he's landing some beautiful shots. If you go watch the highlights, there's some beautiful shots and techniques he landed. I just think Nate was tough and it's risk versus reward there. He's probably going to fight Jorge Masvidal now anyway. So again, he's going to beat up Jorge Masvidal. But I just think if after this fight between Covington and Usman, if Usman wins, there's no one really. If Thingo wants to talk about lapping the division, he has to fight Edwards. And I think he will fight Edwards. I think it's just another fight, and then because the problem for Usman is he can't go up.
I'm just giving
a fight Adesanya.
Like I'm giving Edwards a hard time, but I think he could have done more. If he'd finished Nate Diaz or done more in that fight and it didn't finish like it did, he probably might, he might've got the shot. But now if he does versus Masvidal and win, I think he'll get a shot out of that.
He was never going to get the shot. Like, he was always going to go to Covington anyway. Like, I didn't expect him to get the shot over Covington, because you're right. Money talks here, but I just, you know, in terms of the division, it's not like the division's full of, you know, big time money makers anyway. You know, because Gilbert Burns beat Stephen Thompson in, you know, a wrestling display, nothing special, and he got beaten convincingly by Usman. So, you know, you don't really want to see that fight again. Jorge Masvidal's, you know, essentially stocks at the lowest right now. So I just don't really see anything at 170 other than Edwards next. But yeah, I suppose before we get into talking about 266, I think worth noting, January, we're probably going to get our man Whittaker versus Israel Adesanya. That's January, yeah. So probably not in Australia or New Zealand by the... So I don't think it'll be New Zealand because they're quite tight with the way they're operating, but it's probably going to be in America, I'd imagine, given that they're wide open.
Yeah, it would be nice to have Vegas. That one over here, in whether it's here or in New Zealand. It would be nice, but given the circumstances, I don't think that will happen.
Well, if they want to do it in January, it depends the way the government's going to go. I think New South Wales is probably your best bet. New South Wales in maybe January, February,
could I have it. Yeah, I can get on board with that. I think so too. Yeah, New South Wales. Yep.
Yeah, that's where I mean. just given the way the government's talking, it sounds like they want to be open next year. So fully. So, you know, hopefully. And the other thing in that division is Darren Till, man.
Oh yeah, I almost forgot about that. I didn't like watching that.
It makes me sad, man. I love that guy.
Hey man, Derek Brunson's doing well. He's the pressure he's putting on people now. That top pressure and from Mount and just his top game in jiu-jitsu. Well, maybe it's wrestling. I don't know what he's considering it, but it's beautiful. His pressure's really good, and that's where the issues were. And I think Brunson's going to do that to a lot of people. And I don't know if he can get inside Adesanya and cause him any different problems. But if he can get him to the ground, if they have a rematch, like, Adesanya's going to struggle under that pressure.
Yeah, I think the only issue there is you've got, I think, as you saw from Jan, you've got to have size, because Jan struggled with it early, even. He got it on top of him in the end, but you've got to have that. The size attributes to get on top. So I don't know how much advantage Brunson's going to have in that regard, because Israel is, you know, slippery. And at the end of the day, trying to take him down, you know, his knees and his elbows and all those, they're all dangerous, right? Yeah. They're all sharp. He's a skinny guy. They're all sharp. You know, he's got sharp elbows and he's very fast. So just, I think people saying, oh, Brunson's, you know, he's better now. He's just, and even Brunson said, I'm going to just basically do what Jan did to him. Like, I think that's a bit unrealistic. I also like Whittaker's chances. I think he's turned it around. I think phenomenal effort to turn that around. And after that loss, you think of, for Dana and other people, some people probably would have thought, yeah, that's probably the last we see of Whittaker. Now he'll probably get swallowed up in a division somewhere, given that performance. But I mean, Jared Kennedy was like, he was the big thing, and just got shut down
He shut out Till too. He didn't dominate him. Yeah. It was a very close fight. He didn't dominate him, but I did think, like, I thought that it was, you could tell Whittaker won the fight for sure.
Yeah. And again, like, all you needed to do was win fights and consistently win fights to get back to that fight. Cause it's a fight at the end of the day. We're out in Australia, New Zealand, that people want to see. But, and the Till fight, people will remember, that was his first fight after the loss. So there's always going to be that sense of, you know, he's not going to be as fluid. He might be a little bit
hesitant, you know, gun shy. And
stuff. But the Cannony and the Gastelum fight, people forget, like, the Till fight was 5 rounds, and the Cannony fight was 3, and the Gastelum was 5. These are, Gastelum took Adesanya to the brink in their fight. Right? Yeah. So, and he, yeah, although they're decisions, they're unanimous decisions, they were obvious decisions. And the Gastelum fight was fight of the night. So, like, they're decisions that everyone unanimously agreed. I don't think anyone argued that he lost any of those fights. So, that's the main thing. That's I think, split decisions are a bit harder. But, you know, if you're winning comfortably and now,
you know. Was one of those a split decision? Was one of them a split decision?
No, they were all unanimous.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. No, I was going to say
they were. They weren't split. Like, none of them were split. And I think that's what helps him there. If you're going to get decisions, as long as they're, you know, you controlled the fight and you dominated and you're beating the best people in the division, it makes sense.
Mate, something I wanted to bring up with you was, and I asked you if you, the reason why I asked you if you saw that Dana White's Contender Series fight was Jack Della. Have you read any of the headlines about it?
Was that today or?
No. He fought, I think it was last Wednesday.
Is he the guy from Eternal or something?
Eternal. No, so you watched, remember when I got you to watch Eternal, you watched Steven Erceg versus Cody Haddon. This is the welterweight champion out of Eternal MMA who was, I think, so he was 0-2 as a professional. He lost the decision and then got TKO'd. And then he went on a 9-fight win streak and was 9-2. And all 9 opponents that he fought, he finished them all. And then his 10th fight was in the Dana White's Contender Series, and he won a 3-round decision. And man, if you didn't see that fight, it's another one of those fights on Fight Pass, man. I highly recommend you go back and watch it. Jack Della looked incredible. Welcome to the UFC. He got a contract.
Yeah, so that's the main thing. That's fantastic.
Super stoked.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's awesome. You know, I think it shows that, you know, shout out to obviously Eternal and the MMA organizations here, you know, that if they've got these quality fighters and they're part of that fighter's journey into the UFC. So that's a big win for not only him but for Eternal. So congrats to all of them. That's awesome.
I think over the next few years we're going to see a couple more people from Eternal make it into the UFC. They've got a bunch of prospects that are like UFC bound. Well, at least that's how I view it. Yeah, they just need to keep, you know what it's like. It's hard to say, you know, when you're 6-0 or whatever, it's hard to say if they'll make it, but they're like a lot of promising people, let's say that much.
Well, I think that's the beauty of, you know, Whittaker and Adesanya, like they're showing, you know, Australia and Volkanovski, like these people live in Australia. They live in regular suburbs. For anyone that doesn't know, Whittaker lives in out in Mount Ennis and Smeaton Grange area. So, and that's in Western Sydney, like just in a normal suburb. He lives like a normal person training and he was world champion. So I think that's where now you're going to get all this talent that we have here and all around the world. And that's where the UFC is great, is, you know, you can really come from anywhere. You don't need to go train at a top team or anything like that, and you can get into the UFC and become champion. So I think we'll definitely see more and more from Australia and Eternal MMA and stuff like that get into the UFC, because it truly is global.
Yeah, for sure. It's exciting times, man, just for martial arts in general.
Yeah, man, extremely exciting times.
So, hey, quick question for you. We're almost 45 minutes into the podcast. Should we talk about UFC 266 or what?
That might be a good idea. But it was good little recap, a good little chat to get back on the bandwagon after two months off.
It's been a while. We've got a lot on our chest. Me and Aaron haven't even had a chance to catch up all that much ourselves over this time. So
it's been crazy.
I haven't seen you since you've been in lockdown. It's been a couple of months. So yeah, people get off up. You know, we're trying to fucking catch up too. Give us a break.
Yeah, exactly. It's tough. It's tough. We need to talk, and we do it all on the podcast.
That's it.
We didn't, and for people that do listen, we didn't really plan any of this. We're just talking like two people would talk about MMA. So
yeah, we know UFC 266 is on this weekend. So the plan is pretty much, are you free to chat this week? Yep. Wednesday. Yep. Okay. UFC 266. Yep. Okay. All right. And now we're 45 minutes in and we haven't spoken about it once. You get that on the big jobs, mate.
Obviously, let's get into it. Quickly, we'll touch quickly just quickly on the we obviously have Dan Hooker, who's New Zealand. I always view the New Zealanders and Australians the same. I support the New Zealanders like they're Australians. You know, Australia, New Zealand, you know, we do combat each other in sport and rugby and all that, but I do view us virtually as one nation. So
100%, man, I do too.
But so Dan Hooker obviously had some visa issues, and unfortunately his opponent, Nazrat Hakparaset, I think that's how you pronounce it, he's also got visa issues and can't get in the country. So hopefully that fight goes ahead, and it's a bit of a step back for Dan Hooker, taking competition out of the top five. So we won't touch too much on it, but do you think Dan Hooker gets the win there?
Well, man, if I'm completely honest with you, I don't know enough about his opponent. I have seen him fight before, but I haven't watched him closely. From what I can see, Dan Hooker's on a 2-fight skid. He lost the fight of the night decision to Dustin Poirier June 2020, and then he got knocked out by Michael Chandler January 2021. So what's that, going back 9 months, basically? And his opponent, Nasrak, have you looked him up?
Yeah, so he's lost to Drew Dober and stuff like that, Marcin Held, but he's on his two fight win streak. He's fought in March and then August of last year. So I think it's a good fight, to be honest. I think, you know, Hooker needs to get a win and take a step back, and then you know, it's perfect world. You give someone an opportunity to get a win.
Yeah.
And to climb into that top 10. So perfect battle. I think Dan Hooker will get the job done here. I think given that he's lost two KOs, I think he'll edge out. And given the visa issues and all this stuff, I think he'll do a unanimous decision personally. Yeah. I think 30-27.
I think it might be like that as well. Interesting to note that Nasrat has actually lost. He got TKO'd by Drew Dober in January 2020. And Drew Dober is also a common opponent with Brad Riddell, who Brad Riddell beat in a decision in June this year. And obviously...
Great fight.
Yeah, fantastic. That was an amazing fight. But point is, Nasrat lost to Drew Dober, and then Drew Dober beat Brad Riddell. Brad Riddell and Dan Hooker are training partners. So I think they might have a sense of maybe where they're at. And I think if the City Kickboxing people are smart, man, I think Dan Hooker will take this fight as well.
Yep. And then notably, I think this one people probably don't remember, but Marlon Moraes is versing Merab. And I can't say his last name. Do you know how to say that last name? I've never been able to pronounce it. But he's a gun. I mean,
give us a chance. Give us a chance. I want to see if I can actually get it. I'm trying to bloody pull up the. I've lost it. I've lost it, ladies and gentlemen. I've lost the UFC 266 link.
Davlishvili.
Here we go. I got it. Merab. Oof.
It's tough, huh?
Davlish, oh man, no, I can't say that. No. Nah.
But it's a dangerous fight for Marlon, right? Because he's on a 2-fight skid. And remember, he was the big thing, and then he lost to Cejudo, and then he managed to edge out a split decision over Aldo. But then ever since, I mean, again, he's lost to Sanhagen in that spinning wheel kick, and then Font he's lost too. To Rob Font, and that again, they're two of the best fighters in the division and in the world, right? So no, you know, nothing against that, but you got one fighter that's, you know, on top of the world. You know, won his last 6 fights, and then you've got a fighter that's trying to hold his spot and not lose three in a row, which is not a good thing in the UFC and not a good thing in MMA at all. So I think this is a very odd choice of opponent for Moraes. Like, I would think they would probably give him someone easier just to get a win, but you know, they're in that spot. You're in the UFC, so
that's
there's no
the thing,
easy fights.
Merab is on a bloody 6-fight win streak, albeit they're all 6 of them are decisions, but nonetheless, he's still on a 6-fight win streak, and you've got Moraes, who's on a 2-fight losing streak, been finished in both fights, and the UFC probably are viewing Moraes as a little bit expendable and potentially past his prime.
So, yeah, Yeah, potentially. He's Marab's, only
33. Marab's wrestling pressure is good. So it's going to be a tough fight for Marias. And I'd probably lean towards Marab just based on like where their mental's at, like 6-fight win streak. He's ready to go. He's probably in a better situation mentally than Marias, who's been finished twice in a row in big fights. So I'd pick Marab in that one. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to go Marab, and probably, again, unanimous decision.
Yeah.
And again, as I always say, that spot on the card is a very important spot because you're the free fight. You're the main event of the ESPN preliminary card. So that's a big spot because it's free and it's what people watch just before the pay-per-view. So, if Marias can win big, you turn everything around. But then we head off into the main event. We start off with women's flyweight with Jessica Andrade, who, for people that don't know, was recently the flyweight champion before losing to, I forgot her name again, Wei Li Zhang. Yep. And then she's versing Cynthia Calvillo. Now, they're both coming off losses, Calvillo to Chookagian and Andrade, of course, to the one and only Valentina Shevchenko for the title. So the thing I have for Andrade here is it's tough because she's lost 3 of her last 4, but they've all been top opponents, right? Because she beat Rose Namajunas by KO with that slam. I mean, look at these names. Like she was on a roll and she seems to have fallen off a little bit, right? She beat Claudia Gadelha, Tisha Torres, Carolina Kowalkiewicz, Rose Namajunas with the KO slam. Then she lost to Zhang Weili. Then she lost to Rose Namajunas. Then she beat Chookagian and then obviously lost to Shevchenko.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a topsy-turvy run. But of note here, and the reason I'm going to pick her in this fight, is she did beat Chookagian with TKO to body punches. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Calvillo's last loss is against Chookagian. So I'm going to go
decision. Did you watch that fight, by the way?
Yes. Sorry, I would have.
I didn't mean to interrupt. You're about to say you're going to go for Jessica Andrade. Is that right?
Yeah. No. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I didn't watch the Calvillo Chookagian fight. Yeah. I probably did. I just don't remember it.
If my memory serves me correctly, Calvillo didn't make weight and then showed up and didn't put in a great performance. Okay, it looks like she did make weight. Yeah, she did make weight, but got Chookagian just picked her apart on the air. Just looked better than her everywhere, man. Just looked better than her everywhere. And I think Andrade is going to just be too much.
I did watch that fight because it was on the... Yeah, the Figueiredo Perez card.
Yeah, she just kind of like, man, she was real timid. She didn't take any risks. She stayed on the outside, got picked apart on the outside, but never made any real adjustments to change the momentum of the fight, and literally just lost the fight. Just let it slip away. It wasn't a great performance at all. So I think Andrade comes in with a lot more like hunger in general and like wants to bring the fight. So I think it goes her way as well.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, yep. That we'll put down Andrade for that one. Next one, we head into the heavyweight division. Now, I think this is a fantastic, fantastic fight. Two fighters at the top of the division, looking to probably get back up into the title contention. So you've got Curtis Blaydes, who's coming off a loss to Derek Lewis in February, up against Jairzinho Rozenstruik, who is also he's coming off a win against Augusto Sakai, but he obviously has those big losses against Francis Ngannou and Cyril Gane. And we all know Francis Ngannou is a heavyweight champion. He's fighting Cyril Gane, the interim champion, sometime at the end of the year. So this fight is very important for the division in terms of who's going to rise back up to the intertitle contention.
Yeah.
Who do you see winning this one?
It's a hard... I'd probably say Blades, Curtis Blades, can probably out-wrestle him, control him on the ground, yeah, and win the fight that way.
That's where I'm leaning.
If he imposes himself, I think that that's what's going to happen. If he's affected from the knockout loss to Derek Lewis, and, you know, is real hesitant and doesn't shoot, won't pull the trigger, then maybe it brings Rozenstruik into the fight a little bit more. But otherwise, I think Curtis Blade myself. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going Curtis Blade's heavy wrestling approach. I think he's just going to try and wrestle the whole time. Mm. Even though when you look at his record, I mean, he's got a lot of finishes, TKOs. But yeah, I have a feeling he's gonna just go for the wrestling, get the win, get back, you know, back in there and keep going. Now, what's the, in terms of heavyweight division, you've got Ngannou, Garn, Stipe, Derek Lewis, Curtis Blades, Volkov, and then Rozenstruik. So Rozenstruik's 6 and Garn and Blades 4. So I think realistically the winner of this, I'm not sure, Rozenstruik would end up to me in 4th. Curtis Blades, I don't think, would move really far anywhere ahead of Garn, Miocic, or Lewis, especially because he lost to Lewis. But I think it gives him a, you know, if we're going to say Blades is going to win, I think it gives him that top 5 fight. I think he can probably, if Garn is to lose against Ngannou, he may be able to look into that Garn fight next.
Yeah. What do you think, there's any chance that Blades potentially challenges Lewis? Or, like, you know, if he can't get Garn, or do you think he wants to shoot upwards more and go for, like, Garn or maybe even Miocic?
It depends. It really depends. A lot of it depends on timing and matchups and what they've got available. But if I'm Blaze, I'm waiting after this fight. I'm waiting for that fight to happen, and then I'm looking to fight Cyril Garn if he loses, of course. If Ngannou loses, I feel like he'll probably get an immediate rematch. But then you got Stipe in there as well, and no one really sure what Stipe is doing yet. But nonetheless, a very important fight for the heavyweight division, and we'll see how that one plays out. But we're both there, I think, on unanimous decision by WrestleFuck, pretty much.
Yeah, maybe a unanimous decision. Otherwise, I can see a TKO finish, because I think you mentioned Blades has a lot of TKOs, and I think a lot of those probably come from wearing them down with wrestling and just ground and pound. So, yeah, it'd probably be either wrestling for decision or maybe a ground and pound finish.
Yeah, and now heading, I think what we'll do here is let's jump the Diaz-Lawler and quickly talk about Shevchenko and Lauren Murphy, because I think the Diaz-Lawler fight and Volkanovski-Ortega is the ones that people are going to be most interested in, and we're definitely most interested in talking. So I'm going to be very blunt here and say that Shevchenko is going to maul Lauren Murphy, and that's it.
I have nothing further to add. So anyway, what were you saying about the Nick Diaz fight?
yeah. I'm glad we're on the same page there. If Lauren Murphy wins, good on it.
If Lauren Murphy wins, I'll fucking eat my shoe.
Yes, you can do it. You'll do a shoey live on your Instagram.
If Lauren Murphy wins, I will do a shoey live on my Instagram. You do
it. Tied to Ivasa, shoey.
Speaking of tied to Ivasa, hey man, he was on the McGregor card, and he had a massive knockout win, stole the show. Man, that was amazing.
You know, if Poirier had beaten McGregor like unanimous decision or like 5 rounds, mm-hmm. he would have been the star of the show. If Conor didn't break his leg, he would have hands down stolen the whole card. The only thing that kept him from stealing it in general, like with every fan, was that McGregor broke his leg and became the biggest story, right? But
yeah,
man, that shoey thing, and I mean, Rogan loves it. I think Rogan did a great job selling it as well.
and like you said, bloody Greg Hardy, you know, everybody's favorite person. Fucking everyone loved to see him get knocked out. So Taito Ivasa was, you know, everyone was going for him. Amazing. As you mentioned, the shoeys and that. I remember his Instagram had like 150,000 followers, and after the fight, it had over 400,000. So
he's training at AKA as well. So, you know, he's taking this very seriously. And when you take it seriously and you win, shoeys as you like.
Yeah. Is that where he is now or something?
Yeah, he's training at AKA.
Really?
He's out there. He's been out there a while.
Yeah, good on him, man. I'm a fan. I want to see him win. If there are any Aussies, New Zealanders, the Anzacs, man, I just want to see him win.
Speaking of characters, we now lead into Nate Diaz versus Robbie Lawler. Now, people that don't know, Nate Diaz is the brother of, obviously, I mean, Nick Diaz, sorry. See, I'm even talking about Nate because I'm so used to Nate Diaz. We have not seen Nick Diaz fight since 2015. So it's been if you think about it, we have not seen Diaz fight since before McGregor was really McGregor.
Mate,
That's how long it's been. Like, he's from that era. So, we're so used to seeing Nate, and I think most people know that Nick is probably the better of the two, I find anyway, skill-wise. Yeah. So it's great to see him back, and he's fighting a familiar opponent in Robbie Lawler, who he beat KO punches back in 2004. That's so long ago. So that's and he's been out of the sport. His last performance was a no contest, and that was due to, for people that don't know, big issue around marijuana.
He did test positive for marijuana for sure back then. Remember, he got the suspension, but it was Anderson Silva was juiced.
Yeah, they both did. Yeah, so Anderson Silva tested positive for Drostenolone. And Drostenolone. And Diaz tested positive for marijuana. And for people that don't know, it was a big thing with the Nevada State Athletic Commission because they basically gave him 5 years ban for marijuana, which was crazy when you think about it, especially where we are in today's world
with
marijuana and how it's being treated now. You know, it's a lot less, of an issue. But I think before we get into any predictions, do you think there's going to be massive octagon rust?
Maybe. Well, firstly, I didn't mean to cut you off there and call out the silver juicing. I didn't give you the chance to say it yourself. My bad. Do I think there's going to be ring rust? I mean, I don't know, man. I was looking at Wikipedia. I didn't know this. I mentioned it to you earlier. Nick Diaz's last official win in the UFC was 10 years ago. So, there's potentially ring rust there. I mean, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Who knows, man? And I can't even say if it's a real thing or not because I don't fight. I haven't fought. I don't really have a fair opinion on it.
You've done, I don't know. I don't know if it's ring rust, but it's when I look at it, 38 years of age, he's fit, right? He does triathlons. There's no doubt he's fit. Mm. It's just going to be interesting to see. And this is why it's a perfect fight because Robbie Lawler is by no means in the prime of his career either at 39.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost four fights in a row. He has not won since 2017. So
it's a great matchup. It's a great matchup for Diaz. Diaz is going to get the win, and I think the matchup favors him. But in terms of, trying to have a fair matchup that they both have a chance to win, both guys have a chance to win, I actually think it's a pretty fair fight, man. They've fought before. They're around the same age. They're both tenured in the UFC. They both had a layoff. Neither of them have had wins for quite some time. There's history. It's the perfect fight for his return, I think. And it's probably going to be, what's his name? Robbie Lawler. I reckon Robbie Lawler retires after this fight, win, lose, or draw.
Yeah, I think he will retire. I think it's going to be an interesting one for Nick Diaz. He's a phenomenal fighter. And for those that remember, he had those obviously rivalries with George St. Pierre and I think the Anderson Silva where he lied down on the floor and stuff like that. He's definitely a character, as is his brother Nate. But I'm going to say something controversial. I actually think that Robbie Lawler is going to ruin the party.
Do you?
I don't know. I just have a feeling that they're going to – Nick Diaz – I feel like Nick Diaz is going to be doing good and they're just going to start swinging. Like, if you watch their first fight, they've both got that in them.
I watched it an hour before the podcast, man, because I
haven't – Yeah, I really watched it.
Truthfully – It's 2004. I wasn't following UFC then. I knew what it was, but I wasn't following it. And I'd never seen that fight. So, and that was another one. That was an exciting fight to watch too. second round knockout. You want to talk through the fight? You were just sort of going through it then.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think Nick Diaz is the better fighter. Like, I think in terms of overall, like, I think he has more, you know, the submissions, the striking. I think he's better across the board. I just feel like potentially, I don't know, I'm going back and forward, to be honest. It's a hard fight to pick because they're both well out of their primes. Like, we don't know what Robbie, and I think Nick Diaz, we just don't know what Nick Diaz is going to show up. So, for the sake of it, I'll just say Robbie Lawler. I think they're going to get in a brawl and Robbie Lawler is going to connect and get a TKO. But I can also see Nick Diaz getting a submission.
Yeah, I can see.
I can see Nick Diaz walking in there with the mindset, I've just got to get this win. And but again, he is a Diaz, so... But he may go for the submission. So I'm not really sure, but for the sake of it and for why not, I'm just going to go with a Robbie Lawler, TKO, and he retires on that.
Okay. And Nick Diaz, I'm just going to say Nick Diaz. Who knows what's going to happen, submission or TKO maybe. I don't think it goes to decision. I don't think it goes to a decision. I'm interested to know, though, if...
That's five rounds. By the way.
Okay, it's five rounds. See, that stacks into Nick Diaz's favor too. I don't even know if Robbie Lawler can go five rounds these days.
And it's at 185 now. They moved it to 185 at the request of Nick Diaz.
My question, okay, great. And my question is, if Nick Diaz wins, who do you see him fighting next? What would make sense?
If Nick Diaz wins, they're going to put him smack bang at the top of the division. That is exactly what they're going to do with him, because his name is marketable. They are not going to risk him losing to anyone of danger. I have a feeling they're going to put him smack bang at the top, and he'll fight one of the top
in 185 or in 170, because this fight's the trick at 185.
That's the part I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, at 170, man, I'd love to see him fight Jorge Masvidal. That'd be a massive fan favorite fight.
Yeah, well, that to me makes a lot of sense, right? Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, to be honest, it's probably he's probably got the similar mindset to what Connor did with Donald Cerrone. They just thought, why are we cutting to 155 for this? Like, let's just agree to meet at 70. And I think that's what it is by the sounds of it. They're just looking at it as though, yeah, we're 170 fighters, but why cut the weight? Like, I'm coming back. You're in a four-fight skid. Let's just not cut weight.
They've only just announced that, though, hey?
Yeah, but it sounds like it's been in conversation for a little bit.
Okay. So you don't think... do you think there's any chance Robbie Lawler got blindsided on it being at 185, like a week, you know, the week of the fight?
I don't... Maybe, but I don't think he's going to care.
He goes, don't have to worry about the extra 10 pounds.
I think the weight will help him, because, you know, I think at the end of the day, his path to victory here is to knock him out. Yeah. So I think, and turn it ugly. So I think, you know, I think they'll both like it. I think it makes sense why you make him cut weight. I think it'll be interesting. They'll just come in natural weight. I do like the fact that it's five rounds. That's what's going to... Nick Diaz has phenomenal cardio. He's a triathlete. We know that. But yeah, to be honest, like, it seems silly making a prediction because we just don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
So look, it does seem silly, but who have you got? I'm going to say.
Yeah, I'm just going to go Robbie Lawler ruins the show. All right. And knocks him out.
I got Diaz because I want to see the party. You know, I want the next fight to happen too. I want the 209, the Stockton boys to, yeah. I want to see it. I want to see it all happen, man. And yeah, as you said, Robbie Lawler, if he wins, I think he just retires. I don't think there's any extra hype around him. I don't think there's big fights or anything like that. So
can I just channel my inner Dana White here?
Yeah,
and
go for
say
it.
Nick Diaz wins. You do Connor versus Nate main event, Nick versus Jorge co-main.
Oh.
There you go. Problem solved. Mate, do the Diaz ever
fight on the same card? Have they ever done that?
But they will for that money.
Well, yeah, maybe.
You dangle enough money in front of them, they will do it.
And then what if, you know, And if Diaz beats McGregor and then Diaz beats Masvidal, does Diaz versus Diaz? No,
you
that
do,
would never happen.
You do Poirier versus Diaz for the lightweight title, and you do Usman versus Nick Diaz for the welterweight title on the same card
again, and yeah. then two Diazes yeah. hold the belt.
I don't think it's going to play out this way, personally. But
no way. The UFC in a dream world. The UFC wouldn't do that.
They should 100% do. Listen, UFC's talked about doing, like, Conor wants to do Dallas Cowboys Stadium, right? They will fill that stadium or the Allegiant Stadium at in Las Vegas where the Raiders play. They will fill that stadium with that card. You do McGregor Diaz and Nick Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal. No one gives a shit about records. No one gives a shit about what you've done. People just want to see that. Because that's the truth about the Diaz brothers. The Diaz brothers are not, well, Nick Diaz is, but Nate Diaz is not some phenomenal record like fighter. He's just entertaining. In terms of record, he's not that great. Like, it just isn't. Like, if you look at his record, it's a couple wins, a couple losses, a couple wins, a couple losses.
Yeah.
But he's entertaining and people want to watch him fight.
So, yeah, man, so I don't care if Nick wins or loses. If Nate wins or loses, I still want to watch him fight. 100% if he fights, I'm tuning in.
Exactly. So there you go. That's the plan right there.
Yeah. We'll see what happens, mate. If you're right, I can get on board with that. What about, so if we move on to the main event and then we'll wrap this up, hey, because it's been about almost an hour and 15 now.
Hour and 15 of quality content.
Oh, mate, the best podcast in the world. Best podcast. Yeah. Ariel Helwani's calling his show the best in the world. But he's saying number one. He's saying number one MMA show. He's got no idea what he's talking about.
Oh, he just relies on his guests.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so we move on to our man from Australia, Alexander Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega. And anyone who doesn't know, like, there's obviously big jiu-jitsu community of people that, you know, either listen to this podcast or love MMA. He's obviously part of the Gracie family. Hannah Gracie's obviously his jiu-jitsu coach, so he's well known. So this is a fantastic fight. They both just came off the Ultimate Fighter as coaches on that series. And to be honest, I don't know if they like each other or hate each other, because it's very odd. Seems to be an odd relationship. But they're scheduled to fight this weekend. What do you think? How do you think it's going to play out?
Did you watch any of the show?
Yes.
You did? I haven't seen any of it. What did you make of their relationship? We can talk about the fight. What did you make of the relationship?
So that's why I referenced it. I feel like they're putting it on. I feel like they don't dislike each other that much. Like when you see the pranks on the show, they're like high-fiving each other and they get under each other's skin a little bit, but I don't buy that they don't like each other. I just don't buy it at all. I think they're trying to force it, but I think at the end of the day, they're both very chill guys. They're laid back. They're not your in-your-face sort of guys. They're just relaxed. They're very confident. So I just don't think you're going to run into any problems there.
Okay. But fair enough.
I think the interesting one here, obviously, is that Volkanovski beat Max Holloway twice. Now, I didn't think he won the second fight personally. I thought he lost the second fight. But regardless, it's on his record as a win. And obviously, Ortega got absolutely mauled by Max Holloway.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, we know how we know the sort of tactics that Volkanovski used on Holloway. Do you think with the leg kicks and stuff like that, do you think he can implement that sort of a game on Brian Ortega?
I think so. Like, I think the pressure, whoever can put on the pressure is going to lead this one. And we've saw that Volkanovski's very good at pressuring people and getting them to crumble. So I think he has the ability to do that to Ortega. and Ortega doesn't really like being pushed backwards. And in his recent fight we saw against Zombie, he changed things and really started, and he was the one pushing Zombie backwards and putting the pressure on. And so, you know, Ortega 2.0, as they've been saying. I don't know if Ortega can put that same pressure on Volkanovski. I think Volkanovski's pressure is going to be too much and he's going to be the one leading it. That's what I think. Whether he wins the fight or not, I'm not sure, but I think his pressure is better. So I think the fight takes place more how Volkanovski wants to take it, wants to pursue it. Can Ortega get it to the ground? Can he submit him? I think he can. Is he going to get it to the ground? And I don't know, man. I don't know. I could see this being a decision. I don't know. This fight's a hard one to pick, man. I'm leaning towards Volkanovski. And I think part of it's also because I'm an Aussie and I want to see him win, even though I'm a fan of Ortega.
Yeah, I'm a fan of both, but I want obviously Volkanovski to win. It's a tricky one because it's like when Holloway Volkanovski versus Holloway. It was a hard one because obviously our association, Pedro Sauer, and he's a Pedro Sauer.
Yeah, and I mean Max Holloway is a fucking legend, man. Everybody likes Max.
So it was a tough one, and this one's the same because again he's Hannah and Gracie and Gracie family, jiu-jitsu and all that. So it's a tricky one. But I see this fight going two ways and it's either way, like one would win. So if the fight goes the distance, which I think it easily can, I think you're probably looking at a Volkanovski win just by probably wasn't much groundwork. I think he'd just outstrike him and get the win there. I do see, however, if it does go to the ground or Ortega's fast. You saw the guillotine that he landed on Cub Swanson. Mm. That grip and that adjustment was very fast. So I think if they do end up in a position where, Ortega gets a hold of him, it could spell trouble. So that's what Volkanovski's really going to have to avoid. So I think that he can and he can get the decision. But if I'm going to lean one way, and I've had some odd predictions this card, I actually think Ortega's going to submit him.
Do you?
I think he's going to get a hold of him. I think Volkanovski's going to be in control of the fight and then he's going to get a hold of him and he's going to sink something in fast.
Yeah.
That's okay. What I just feel. I just think he's got great jiu-jitsu and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I could be completely wrong here, but I just feel like I have a feeling like Ortega's going to, I just know Hannah, Gracie and stuff, they're probably watching lots and lots of footage on this big fight and it's been delayed this fight. So they're probably game planned for it. And I just feel like he can land some, let's go guillotine. I think he'll land a sneaky guillotine.
Fair enough. I could see a world where that happens for sure. My pick, I'm going to lean more to Volkanovski and I think he's going to, I think the pressure is going to be too much and he's going to out-pressure him in a similar way to Chad Mendes and end up getting a TKO finish or something like that. And just because it'll be like three or four rounds, maybe the fifth round towards the end of the fight, and he's going to wear on Ortega, empty his gas tank, and then like TKO him. That's what I see. That's what I think. But
see something.
I mean, both guys, I think Ortega could submit for sure. Could submit him for sure. It's a tough one, man. It's, another one of those fights. If they fought a bunch of times, I think they'd both win a few.
I think that, I think actually based off what you just said with that pressure, I think there's a case for, I think you may see Tony Ferguson versus Kevin Lee where you might have a situation where Volkanovski's actually dominating, rocks him, and somehow, he's doing ground and pound, they end up in the guard and... Ortega, as I'm saying, is very fast on the submissions. Volkanovski might feel like he's got the finish and then you snap in a sneaky triangle, something like that, right? So that's what I mean by Ortega with the, with his submissions and the fact that he is obviously a high-level black belt in jiu-jitsu. And I'm half saying it because I wouldn't mind seeing a nice submission. Either way, I prefer, obviously, I want Volkanovski to win because I'm Australian, but I'd like to see a finish here either way.
Yeah. Ortega's, his jiu-jitsu is good, man. And that's the thing, like you're mentioning, snatching on subs, he's always a submission threat.
That's so,
no matter where the fight is or what's happening, there's like a threat of it. Because he will, if you, like you said, Cub Swanson, if you expose your neck, he will latch onto it and then figure out the rest after.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If he, it's, you know, it's MMA, it doesn't take long. And if he locks that in, and whether it's over the chin or whatever, like if it's a choke or whatever, if he grabs a hold of you fast and gets it locked in, he's got that Gracie jiu-jitsu. Everything's tight. Everything's, you know, there's no way out. I think, you know, it could spell danger for Volkanovski. So, but hopefully, and as a fan, hopefully Volkanovski's trained well and he's got a few game plans for how to connect with Ortega.
I don't think Volkanovski's been promoted the best. And there was talk of it throughout this fight as well. I think Helwani was asking him about if he thinks he's been promoted well. And I don't think he has. And the problem with that is because he fought Max Holloway, they promoted Holloway a bit more. Then he won the title. And then when they rematched, they were still promoting Holloway, probably hoping that Holloway won it from the UFC's perspective. But Volkanovski won that fight too. And now he's kind of been an underpromoted champion and he has an opportunity against Ortega here. If he gets a finish on the big stage, on a card like this with Nick Diaz and against Ortega, who everybody knows, it's come Monday morning, Volkanovski's star power will be at another level. I don't think he's going to have massive star power like some of the biggest fighters, but it's definitely going to be a notch above where it is now. And then in his next fight or two, you could see the legacy of his featherweight strap becoming a big thing.
Yeah, man, I definitely think he's been under-promoted. And maybe out here as well, with lockdown, it's been hard to promote him out here. Mm. But I would like to see him promotable. But, you know, part of that comes with he needs to make sure he's getting some knockouts and some finishes, right? If you want to get promoted, that's part of it as well, right? You know, like, go back again, the obvious example, obviously Conor, right? Obviously he talked a big game, but when he was in featherweight, he was knocking people out, right?
Yeah.
It's one thing to talk a big game against a promotion, but if you're not knocking people out, getting those results. So if he can, you know, and the last fight, unfortunately for him, a lot of people felt Max Holloway won, like a lot of people. And you know, it was very much 50-50, maybe even 60-40. So everyone was a bit different. So that doesn't help him either. Because every time he fights, if you read the comments, like go and read the comments, a lot of people write Holloway's the champion. So it makes it hard. So if he can completely dominate him here in this fight, Ortega, then I think that goes a long way to helping him build his name. And then hopefully Whittaker can win the title. And then, you know, later on next year, they can both defend titles against whoever out in Australia.
Imagine that. I'm a fan of Adesanya. It's hard. I find it hard to pick against Adesanya. Whittaker, Adesanya, I'm torn. I'm super torn on that one.
I love Whittaker.
Oh, man.
He's a legend.
Yeah, they're both. I think they both are. That's a tough one.
Oh, they both are, but obviously Whittaker's from where I am, Sydney, South Western Sydney. So, you know, I love that. And I just love his overall attitude and professionalism. And it's just nice to see someone like that win. It's refreshing.
Yeah, for sure. All right, man.
Anyway,
what do you reckon? Do you want to call it? With sort of almost an hour and a half in now, I think that's time. People aren't going to want to listen to us ramble for much more if they've come this far.
I'm sure they could listen all day, I'm sure. But yeah, we'll definitely be, for everyone listening, we'll definitely be back a lot quicker next time. We'll be out of lockdown. Never know, maybe the next one will be in person, which would be amazing.
Oh, mate. That's on the agenda. Don't worry, that's going to happen.
When we disagree, we can start swinging.
Just break out into a fight. And then it's like you, Aaron Morelli, back in the mic. So anyway, I was right about what I said. Brad's unconscious.
Yeah. that'll be good. That'll work well. But yeah, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Brad. And good to be back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thanks everybody for tuning in.